Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 82 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and this week we're going to recap some of the weekly news. In entertainment talk, we're going to start with Tom Hanks' newest movie going straight to streaming services. Batwoman is looking to get recast over on CW, and we finally get the Snyder Cut that everybody's been asking for. And then in tech news, we've got SpaceX coming up with their first human launch. The FCC is questioning Starlink and their broadband claims. And cyber attacks are looking to potentially be on the rise here in the near future. We got a lot of news to get to. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
And welcome back to episode 82. Happy Memorial Day.
Yeah, nice long weekend for everybody. We had some torrential rain all week in Chicago. Yesterday was nice, hot as balls. But looking to take some more relaxation today.
Yeah, I need to relax today because I went a little harder than usual last night. And today is definitely recovery for Memorial Day. We can get started with the entertainment news this week. First big topic, I guess, is that the movie Greyhound, which is not about buses, but but it's the submarine drama starring Tom Hanks, it's a Tom Hanks movie. Tom Hanks action military movie was going to be a big one. This is now set to debut specifically to Apple TV,
which is interesting because they're not taking the general streaming route. Like, I'm really curious as what Apple had to pay for the exclusivity, because it's going to be one of those $20 to watch things, I'm assuming. Like, it's not going to be free to Apple Plus subscribers.
I think it is. It's an Apple TV Plus exclusive. I think it's straight to Apple TV Plus. I don't think it is a premium video on demand. It is a straight video on demand exclusive to Apple TV Plus. So I don't know what they paid for that.
Yeah.
But I believe that's where that is where it's heading.
This is interesting.
Apple TV Plus.
Because every other straight-to-digital release that was supposed to go to the theater has hit the general streaming. You could buy it on Prime. You could buy it on Apple. You could buy it, you know, on a bunch of other services. This is the first one that a company has paid for exclusivity. We're entering some really weird territory. I hope that this doesn't become the norm. You know, like, this is going to... It's going to be really weird, because then if you have, you know, fans of actors or fans of certain movies coming out, now if you don't have Apple TV but you're a big Tom Hanks fan, now you got to fucking pay for the month, you know, and like, this is really going to hit people, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're a big Tom Hanks fan, paying for that month of Apple TV Plus is still less than paying for a single ticket to go see it in the theater.
Well, you have to watch it at home. You don't get the theater experience either.
Yeah.
You know, big war movie, submarines, like, yeah, those Dolby speakers and some nice recliners and everything. Some people might be mad that I got to pay $5 and watch it at home rather than pay $15 and watch it and have the theater experience. Personally,
yeah, I
prefer
that,
to see it in the theater.
It's just, it is an interesting concept. This is another one that goes straight to a video on demand service without...
Well, like, just think of the impact that this is going to have on movies. So... Is Jurassic Park really Jurassic Park if you never get to watch it in the theater? If you watch it straight from at home? Does Jurassic Park ever make 7 other fucking movies if the first one isn't on the big screen with big ass brontosauruses and T-Rexes and loud ass roars? Does anybody give a shit about that franchise if you don't get to experience it in the theater?
Yeah, I mean, probably not. Especially not at that time. I don't know. Today, maybe. The thing is, we never know the effect that, especially when we talk about, like, yeah, these non-premium video on demand services, but just going straight to Netflix, going to Apple TV, we don't know how that affects Apple TV. Can they justify, yep, funding more and more of these from the get-go? So this one's coming out of the Sony studios, and this is the first Sony one going straight to a streaming service. And I don't know, is it lucrative enough for Sony to make the next one?
Well, you assume because it's a war movie, it costs a lot to make. But considering it's a submarine movie, maybe not so much. You know, you make a subset, you spent a little bit on CGI. Like, I don't know what the bottom line on this movie was, but you know what they're what was the biggest?
Well, I mean, it's not a submarine movie. The movie itself, it's a hunting submarines, but I mean, it's all filmed on, you know, the backdrop of it is all open water on a ship. It, you know, the Tom Hanks's ship is above the water, and they're hunting submarines. It looks like it's an incredibly well done, a high production value movie. Yeah, I've seen
the previews. That's what I mean. Like, I don't know how much Apple had to pay Sony. Like, is Sony just breaking even on this? Are they hurting for money? You know, like, I'm sure Apple didn't pay them the $300 million that this movie might have made in the theater.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that more of these studios aren't going with the premium on-demand model. The vast majority of these movies, you know, Trolls World Tour got roasted by the National Theater Association, and because they went premium video on demand. Pretty much everybody since has gone straight to a service, with Disney having their service and Artemis Fowl and then Hamilton, and now this going straight to Apple TV. I don't know. Does that not offend the National Association of Theater Owners because people don't have to pay for it in a premium model? I don't know why they're all choosing to do this.
I don't know how good this movie is, but does this take it out of Oscar contention? Can it not be qualified for? If Tom Hanks is a phenomenal ship captain and deserved an actor nod, does he even qualify anymore?
I'd have to go dig around, but I thought that that they changed their rules for this year. That they made it an exception this year for traditional theatrical releases not being required.
This is all just getting really, really weird. I just think it's going to affect the way we look at movies and watch movies. Like I said, you know, Jurassic Park doesn't wow a nation or take the breath of the world if you don't see it initially in the theater. I rented 1917 again so I could watch with my girlfriend because I loved that movie and it was good at home. But I'm telling you right now, it wasn't like the movie experience. It loses something. And most of these movies, you know, yeah, like Trolls World Tour, or certain that Wahlberg movie that went straight to fucking Netflix. Yeah, some of them, not so much. It's just a long TV show that ends, you know, in one sitting. But there are certain movies that need that big room. They need the big screen. They need the loud surround sound, like in order for you it to really captivate you as, you know, as an audience member. And yeah, I think this is going to be a trend, you know, and I don't like the fact that so many people are receiving it. I hope it's just because of COVID. You know, everybody's at home, they just want new content, but the minute the floodgates open, everyone's like, yeah, no, fuck these streaming services. I'm trying to get out of the house, and it kind of evens out.
I do think most of these are going to return back to a normal theatrical model. It's just surprising the direction that many of them gone, especially not trying out the premium model to get something similar to what would be box office numbers. It to me that's weird and interesting, and I'm wondering what the financials are for, you know, Apple TV Plus and what they're paying for these. You know, this blockbuster movie to be straight to their service.
I mean, they might consider it a marketing move and took a big loss on it, but they know that they're going to get some subscribers. So, you know, they just look at it as we paid $50 million to grab an extra 100,000 subscribers, you know, or whatever the case is. You know, like I'm wondering if they just considered it a acceptable loss in order to up their subscription numbers. Because once you get it, then you're going to watch Morning Show, you're going to watch, you know, Defending Jacob, and you're going to see like, oh man, it says some good shit on it, and then you might not cancel because it's only $5 a month.
You know, that has to be their assumption, is that this is going to drive up a certain amount of new subscriptions. Otherwise, what's the point? So yeah, you've got to assume that's it. And I don't know, we'll see what the numbers are. We'll see what effect it has. But this is a big movie. So we'll, and I might legitimately go get it just to see it. For $5, that's a great movie to go see. It's as much as it is to rent it on any other service.
Yeah.
So, but then, you know, while we're talking about streaming services and big movie releases, the Trolls have won. And, and this Snyder Cut is coming.
This is exciting, actually. Like, we need to put this thing to rest. Like, the speculation and, like, the whether it's existed or not. Like, this is going to be interesting. I'm going to have to watch a shitty movie again just to see.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about this the other day, and I was thinking, I might even have to watch the shitty movie twice now. In the sense that I might have to watch the original to remember all of the parts of the original.
I'm pretty sure I remember the original enough to know how bad it was and pick out the differences.
Yeah, the truth is I don't have 7 hours of my life.
Nope.
To watch
nope.
The 3-hour original and then the potential 4-hour long Snyder cut. I don't have that kind of time in my life to devote to Justice League to, you know, a mediocre at best movie.
Yeah, no.
But we'll see.
I do have time to watch it and scroll Twitter for the next 3 days and see what the fuck everybody's reaction is, because honestly, I kind of want it to be just as bad, just so all these like DC fanboys that have been saying like, well, it was a good movie until they ruined it. The Snyder Cut will prove it. And it's like, no, man, like it wasn't a good movie. I don't see whatever they cut on the floor from Snyder's true vision saving this fucking thing. If anything, it's just going to drag it out. Yeah, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, and you know, you get all of the actors from Justice League are out in support of the Snyder Cut and promoting it coming out. And you know, there's a ton of rumors about like what's going to be in it and what additional villains are going to be in this,
Dark
and what
Side's additional supposed to be in it.
Yeah, I even saw something about like Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern might be in the Snyder Cut. I was like, how the fuck is that a thing? That can't be true.
Reynolds,
like,
Reynolds would have done shit on that thing on Twitter by now.
Yeah, like are we done? Are we just gonna say anything to keep hyping up this potential Snyder Cut to make it relevant? And then in the end, is any of it relevant? Does any of it matter to the direction that DC is going? No. It's just a pointless release. But you know, good on you, HBO Max. You were able to pull this one off.
The amount of content they say is going to release on HBO Max this week, though, is insane. I got the email from Hulu saying, because I have HBO through Hulu, like all I have to do is log in with my Hulu login. So it's going to be interesting to see how much is on here besides the Snyder Cut. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's supposed to be like 600 movies,
6,000 or something like that.
Yeah, it's a large catalog that HBO Max has. So
I'm gonna go into for the deep cuts. I'm looking for some really good. Like, oh shit, who's seen this in a while?
Yeah, the HBO Max. It looks like it's going to be a pretty strong service coming out the gate with just all of the normal HBO properties, but the huge movie catalog coming out of Warner properties, all of the Warner Media movies. So it's definitely, you know, going to be interesting as that rolls out. That's rolling out this week.
Correct? Yeah, I think on Wednesday, I want to say the 27th. Today's the 25th.
Yeah, so you know, be interested to hear as everybody goes diving through and putting together their best of lists and everything that's going to be on there. But one that people are going to be really looking forward to is this Snyder Cut. See what rumors are true. See if the movie is really that much better. And then who ended up finishing the movie? All I know is, you know, he's got to be pissed.
The lead editor.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, whoever that guy is just got to be pissed. This is just, there's no win for him in this.
No. Either
everybody comes out and loves
he's
it.
Right,
and
now, he's sitting there like, this fucking jagoff handed me a 4-hour fucking film. I can't fucking release that. What am I supposed to do with that? And like every scene he cut out is like integral to the movie. And no, it's going to be interesting. I just can't wait for the hashtag to die. We could have a nice funeral for the hashtag release the Snyder Cut. Like, just that thing could get buried now.
But then I guess it's in other DC news, we've got Ruby Rose, who has left and gone quit the Batwoman show.
Yeah, I read her quotes, and it's very like, you know, I just want to thank everyone for the opportunity. I'm going to pursue different things. Da, 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 da. What happened? Like, what really happened?
I really want to know, too, in the background. I've got to assume it isn't just a, you know, oh, well, I got other things I want to do. It's like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, you signed on to be the first, you know, DC major female lead on a show. It was all LGBTQ focused. Yeah, I was going to say,
it was a big thing for LGBTQ community, too.
And then for you to be the advocate for that community and then just to walk away from a multi-year run as this character, I don't know. Like, it just doesn't, nothing about this seems right.
I'm not a fan of her acting at all. Like, she's not a good actress, I don't think. So I'm wondering if, like, this is a Twitter reaction, if Twitter went hard on her, if the critics just, you know, if they're like, look, we're only one season and we can recast this and try to save this show. I don't know the ratings on it. I watched the first two episodes. I couldn't do it.
I was going to say, I don't know a single person who actually watches the show regularly, but
I'm sure our friends from Take a Knee probably watch it. They love that DC trash.
But yeah, I don't know. It's a really weird turn going there, and they're recasting it, so they're going to keep the show going. But you know, Ruby Rose steps away.
And they did say they were going to try to cast another LGBTQ character. So
I think they have to at this point. Yeah, I mean, they went hard as this being in like an advocate show, being a show that's putting LGBTQ to the forefront. You can't. What are you going to do? Go back from that?
Yeah, I just don't know how many of them, you know, how many famous faces they have to choose from. You know, like, it's going to have to probably be some new face.
Yeah, go find a no-name, because finding the big name in the community definitely didn't work out for you.
Yeah, get somebody that's hungry, needs a job.
Yeah. Well, I think that takes us through what we're looking at for entertainment this week. And we can move over to some tech news. And one of the big upcoming things for in tech news is this new SpaceX launch going in the near future. We've got the first human flight coming out of the U.S. Going to the International Space Station. So the last one that did this was in 2011. This is now going to be the first one since 2011, and it is the first one ever by a private company, SpaceX, launching astronauts over to the International Space Station.
I'm curious as if they even have to do anything. Like, are they being chauffeured? Because these things launch themselves, they land themselves. There hasn't been a human on it, and you know, since the beginning. So, like, is this like space Uber? Like, that's kind of like what I get from it. Is, you know, there's no joysticks, there's no nothing for them to do. It's just two seats in a pod. And I'm like, I guess we're going for a ride, guy.
I gotta imagine they're having some level of control for the docking of at the ISS, but maybe not.
I don't know. I think Elon trusts robots more than he trusts any human.
That's completely possible. But yeah, this is a big step. You know, they've been testing this for months in pretty like rigorous testing with all the emergency systems and the parachuting systems coming back to Earth, that eject system that they tested about 2 months ago. So, you know, SpaceX has been working hard to prove that they're ready for human flight, ready for to take on NASA's astronauts. And this will be the first one. And it seems that, you know, SpaceX has left every other space company in the dust. I don't hear anything else about, you know, Boeing's efforts or anybody else's efforts for human flight. It looks like SpaceX is now moving forward, not with some kind of exclusive contract. NASA is not going to award an exclusive contract, but it doesn't seem like there's any other plans other than SpaceX.
Yeah. This is interesting. Like I said, it's a progression. We always like the progression. You know, after this comes the Dragon and massive amounts of people getting shipped to the moon, where he's hitting his goals. He's like, this dude is one of the most ambitious people of our lifetime. You know, it's crazy to see him just keep pushing forward like this. So I wish the astronauts the best of luck and hope everything goes good for him.
Yeah, and then, you know, a weird part about this whole story with getting ready for this human flight was pretty much out of nowhere. You get the NASA chief of human flight, so the guy who should be in charge of these programs, you know, we're weeks away from the first human flight, and he resigns from NASA with a very like cryptic message on like, hey, you know, I gotta step down. Sometimes you take risks and whatever else in your career, and I made a mistake and I've got to step down. Doesn't say what the mistake is. It doesn't. I haven't seen any press release that addresses why.
But the NASA like chief very just walked away. Like Japanese for like him to like come publicly and, you know, I must retire in shame.
Like, yeah,
I fucked up. I will not disclose. I will not shame my family by giving details. But I must put my head down in shame and leave. It's very you know, east side of the world, Eastern Hemisphere.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I don't understand what necessitated it, and they haven't come out and said too much about it.
I'm wondering if he had to give a finger when he left. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the story will come out eventually. You're not gonna put a you know, retirement like speech together like that and not have people be like, hey, wait a minute. Like, unless reporting and investigative journalism has gone that far down the toilet that they just leave that one on the table, which I wouldn't doubt that either.
Well, you know, this is a big step towards getting to setting up the little base stations over at the moon. My kids signed up for, they did a live class that was interviewed Jessica Meir, who's over at the International Space Station right now. She was talking about how she's hoping to be the first female on the moon, and talk about NASA's plan of setting up the base station, doing long term exploration and long term stay over on the moon. And she's campaigning herself to do it. She did it this live talk with over on Zoom last week. So it was cool to watch that with the kids. And yeah, maybe she makes it out there. She's definitely hoping to be there on the, I guess, the ground floor of establishing that.
Yeah, that's going to really interest me. You know, can we create artificial gravity yet? Like, or is this going to be like Expanse? Are we going to have these brittle bone people coming back to Earth now because they lived on the moon for too long?
You know? I mean, potentially. I we'll see how long they stay there. I imagine that it's going to be similar in their the time frame that they stay on the International Space Station and return. So, you know, they've been 10 months over on the International Space Station. It does have an effect on the body, but they can recover.
And then while we're still talking space and Elon, a G-Pi throwing shade, throwing some shade at Elon.
Yeah. He claims that he doesn't trust the speed claims of SpaceX's Starlink, and because he doesn't claim it, he doesn't believe it qualifies as a true broadband company, which he's pulling government funding or making it not available to Starlink for the rural broadband grants.
This fucking dude.
Yeah, I mean, Elon is claiming that he far exceeds the minimum standards for what is considered broadband, that his latency speeds are much lower than a lot of other broadband companies that are providing rural internet, and then his download speeds and everything else are significantly greater. But still, the GPI says, you're padding your numbers until you can better prove that Starlink is providing that necessary internet. He's pulling them out of the $16 billion of funding that would have been able to go to Starlink in these rural internet grants.
Yeah, there's got to be some underlying bullshit with this. This has got to be political or just spiteful, to say the least.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he's right. I don't know. Yeah, maybe he's right. Maybe he's being quite prudent with government money and saying that you've got to do better before you can get the government keys.
The dude that killed net neutrality. Yeah, no, yeah. I don't think he knows a goddamn thing. And I'm gonna stick with my guy Musk. You know, I just think I think it's funny because he wants the money because it helps, you know, speed things up. But does he need the money? Like, probably not. And you know, it's probably just one of those things that he probably laughs at, and then when Starlink goes live and they're killing it, he could just tell this dude to take that Reese cup and shove it up his ass.
Yeah, and I'm sure Elon and his Starlink team is quite dissatisfied with this result. They've in the past been looking for the FCC to reclassify them as a low latency internet option, and the FCC has not granted it for them, even though they in their opinion far exceed the standards for low latency internet. But again, the FCC is not cited on there in saying that satellite internet doesn't qualify, even though SpaceX argues that low Earth orbit satellite is different and should be classified differently than other satellite internet.
Yeah, like I just think there's got to be something behind closed doors that's going on here. You know, it's, you figure it'd be really easy for Elon to prove, right? You know, or I don't know. I just think I can't take this story at face value.
Yeah, so we'll I'm sure see more about it. I don't think it's not gonna slow down Starlink or whatever else. And
no,
but it's a. I think it would be a big step towards them gaining legitimacy and being able to roll this out a little faster and maybe increase how many people are willing to sign up for subscriptions. Like, it's never good for an internet company to, you know, once he starts trying to sell this to consumers and somewhere on there, when somebody Googles it, is that, you know, the FCC doesn't qualify you as a broadband internet. So they can't advertise themselves as a broadband internet or a low latency internet until they get to this point. I imagine that's going to hurt them some. So I'm sure Elon's working hard to fight against any of these rulings, but we can move over. I guess we could talk about another billionaire real fast while we're coming out of space and just mention a cool thing that happened this week, or, you know, however you look at it. Jack Dorsey giving away $5 million. He's already promised to pretty much get rid of all of his wealth in his lifetime. You know, he contributed $1 billion of all of his Twitter stock into a charitable fund, which due to COVID and kind of the bumping of some of these stocks, that $1 billion in stock that he put aside for charity is now worth $1.2 billion. So technically, I guess he's given up $1.2 billion to charity at this point. And you know, they're slowly divesting and selling some of those stocks in order to fund his charitable endeavors, and $5 million of it just went to the UBI charity ran over there by Andrew Yang.
I just wonder how far $5 million goes on. You know, is it $5 million to try to raise awareness of UBI? Are they going to fund a program? Because, you know, $1,000 a month, $5 million doesn't fund it for that long, you know. I'm just glad somebody's doing it. Like, you know, I'm not trying to knock the donations or anything like that. We, you know, we need to do some experiments and bring this philosophy to the forefront. But yeah, I just don't know. When it comes to things on a national scale, $5 million is not a lot of money.
No, but Humanity Forward, the charity, is giving these as micro grants and experimental UBI to people to probably just gather data on what people are doing with the money, what the effects are, to try to put some hopeful science down the road on whether UBI improves some of the outcomes that it has claimed to do. So it's...
Well, like the thing for me with UBI is they're going to give the UBI to a lot of people that were affected by COVID, they said. And, you know, yes, you want to see people that truly need the money get that UBI and better their lives. But to me, the big experiment with UBI is going to be with the people that don't necessarily need the money but could use the money. Because that's going to be the vast majority of the country. You know what I mean? Like, we're not overwhelmingly a poor nation. So, like, the middle class, the upper middle class, you know, even some of the lower middle class, these are people that are getting by, but are getting by check to check or have a small savings and, you know, sacrifice vacations and things like that to lead a kind of a normal life. I'm interested to see what happens with these families once they're given, you know, $1,000 a month and how that affects the economy, because these are people that are going to funnel that money back into the economy in different ways. You know, the poor people will get this UBI and pay their bills and it'll bring them back up to a better place. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see people in the middle class, when they get the extra money, the freedom that it gives them to do other things with it.
Yeah. We talk on You Behind the Show more than probably any other nerd show in the world, mostly because it's something of interest to both of us. And I think it does have the potential. I always stand by the fact that I don't fully believe in UBI as being a solution to things. So I like the fact that these charities are going to at least give it an attempt in certain areas and start gathering data to see how it supports. And I'm sure it would help some. It's just a matter of, it would probably help many. It just comes down to the overall cost of it. Is it justified and is it supportable? And that's where the big issues come from.
Yeah, well, we'll keep an eye out on Humanity First and see how they're rolling this out. And I mean, the fact that they got a Jack Dorsey in their corner, Elon Musk has said his support of it. So maybe, you get two of the richest people in the world backing the philosophy and then putting some bucks behind it. We'll see where it goes. The fact that we're even talking about this as a nation now is a huge step forward.
Yeah, well, we can talk about some of these other changes that we're seeing from COVID right now. And one of them is all these, there was an article specifically about these tech conferences becoming virtual and really what the virtual changes to these tech conferences just look like content on demand for these panels and all these other companies that are putting together what would be normally, their own little stage presentations and their own demonstrations of things. It's now looking like on demand level mini almost like TED Talk type things.
Yeah, they got to figure something out, right? Like so many companies really depend on these trade shows to release their innovations and what they're trying to sell. So the fact that all these conferences are getting canceled is really going to hurt these startups. People, entrepreneurs, people trying to get something going. These are the people I feel the worst for. So it's good that they're still trying to give everybody a showcase for this, but it's going to be interesting to see how it changes. In one aspect, it's cool to give more people access to it. So, we can't ever go to CES or E3 or anything like that. But if it's virtual and they open it to the public, hey, everybody gets to go and check out these cool gadgets. But at the same time, I'm a brick and mortar guy. Like, I like going and buying things and touching them and holding things. And I'm not a very online shopper. So I kind of attribute my feelings to this, to that same mentality, is I'd rather be at the convention and watch the things go, watching this doodad right there in front of me, see it, touch it. Like, I think you lose something with this.
Yeah. I mean, I think you do lose something, but we talked about the future of conferences last year when, leading up to E3, you get Stadia doing its own release with Google. We don't need to talk about what happened to Stadia after it came out. But as far as the production and the show that they put out in advance of the conference, then you also get some other companies that are putting together their own and kind of skipping the conferences initially. And we talk about whether, like, can these conferences continue to survive? Can they continue to even justify the fact that they exist? Why do companies not control their own narrative instead of, losing their message caught up in the middle of these conferences, where they're the hype that they can generate only lasts so long?
A lot of it had to do with, like you said, the hype is that E3 generated the hype. It wasn't Xbox. It was the fact that everybody came to this one location and debuted everything at once. So it had this big hype thing. If you get, if everybody goes like the Apple route where the Apple press conferences, I don't think you get as big of an audience, because the only people who watches those Apple conferences are the Apple heads.
Yeah, but they don't need that big of an audience necessarily. What they need is the publicity and the articles written afterwards, the tech bloggers and everybody afterwards. And if you can separate yourself from all the other noise, you can get a little more dedicated control over your messaging.
Well, I think if you're relying on the people who write the tech blogs and everything like that, you have no control over your messaging. If all you're speaking to is that little audience that's going to write their own opinion piece and put their spin on it, are you really controlling your narrative? Like, you know, the fact that these conferences were streamed and were like the big, if you were into video games, you just watched it. You know what I mean? So like, if you're a gamer, you just watch it and you take it all in. And it's not just Xbox fans that watch the Xbox One. It's video game fans in general. So you're speaking to your core community. If E3 dies and then Xbox, Sony, all these game developers just go and release their own like little videos like that and go like the Apple route, I think now you're just talking to your bubble. You're either talking to people that hate you or talking to people that support you. You're not talking to anybody on the fence. You're not pitching new ideas to anybody that may become a future customer. You're either talking to people that are going to rip on you because they hate you and they're just looking for shit to rip on, or you're talking to your audience that was going to buy it anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I still think that the conferences, I don't know, maybe some of these conferences die. I'm curious to see what's going to happen with, like, you know, Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, which is going to do a virtual thing. And, you know, different from E3 where everything was televised or found online anyway. You know, a lot of what takes place at the Comic-Cons is these exclusive panels.
Yeah, I can't see that ever going away because you can't get a dude to sign your comic book at a virtual, you know, thing. So I don't see Comic-Cons going away. I don't see them being affected. I thank God that C2E2 happened right before the COVID. Like, we literally, I went to the last con of 2020.
Yeah.
You know, so we were able to get some stuff for the show. I was able to get some collectibles and things like that. But yeah, part of the big thing of cons is getting to meet the actors. It's a very in-person thing. You know, fuck virtual cons. I don't, you know, the panels are the only thing I think that you gain some audience on virtually. Other than that, if you don't have the nerd experience, if you can't dress up in your cosplay, if you can't walk the floor, if you can't shake the hand of the guy you admire, people are going to say, fuck it, I don't care.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be a physical component there, but I'm hoping, as somebody who doesn't frequent the cons, that you know, maybe they open up some of the panels that used to, you know, you couldn't even bring your cell phone or, you know, take your cell phone out and record them or whatever else. They were very tight on, you know, if you missed the panel, you can maybe catch some blogger's recap of it, but you can't view it yourself, keeping it exclusive to the conventions. And now I'm hoping, you know, maybe this virtual con thing catches on in the sense of exposing some of the panels, some of the things to everybody.
Yeah, panels is the only thing you gain from, but cons are so much more than panels. You know, it's shitty.
All right, and then one of the last, or the last article for the week, and it's just more kind of speculation on the future of what COVID is looking to do, some of the long-term effects. And this was an article by Forbes where they're looking at saying that, in their opinion piece, the largest cyber attack in the history, they estimate will take place probably within the next 6 months. And I tend to agree with the position of the author of the article, looking at how widespread it is for all these companies to have adopted these virtual policies, the work from home policies and everything else, but their security has never been set up to do so. So, you know, a lot of these companies have been fighting off, whether it's, you know, Chinese corporate espionage or whatever group out there is looking to hack into these companies. It was always way more difficult for them to do so because you had to hack in into essentially, you know, a bunker of a system. And now everything's pretty exposed and there's a way to secure it, but we're not there right now. Regardless whether we're there right now or not, the mass adoption of virtual policies, working from home policies are in place. And, you know, you get companies like Facebook announced that they're just going to let their people forever work from home, that they're not requiring anybody to come back to work. Twitter's announced the same thing. So you have a lot of these tech companies that are announcing and moving towards remote work as the norm, that when COVID's over, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think a lot of these Silicon Valley companies are going to be like, yeah, fuck it, work from home. Move, actually. Get out of San Francisco. We're going to pay you less. you don't need all that money for rent. So now we can offer lower salaries because you could just buy a 5-acre whole house in Kentucky for $60 and live there.
I mean, I've said for a long time that I think that was the direction that a lot of work was going to head was essentially just paying people cheaper. Just the concept of like just geographically reducing your cost by hiring somebody in rural Kansas to do your, you know, your coding, your customer service, to do all of the things that you would normally rely on an in-person people in Silicon Valley. You know, you got to pay that person $200,000 to be, you know, middle income family in that part of the country. You could pay somebody $60,000 in rural Kansas and they're living well.
Yeah.
So why not? Like, I think, you know, also we're going to see some flourishing there.
They talk about that being a problem with work from home too, is that now you have to decide what the job value is and eliminate kind of like cost of living. So it's, was that job only paying $200,000 because they had to live in the area, or is that job worth $200,000 a year that they're doing? You gotta weigh them both, you know, and that's gonna be a pendulum that swings back and forth for a while before it slows down and we find that fair middle ground, you know. But as opposed to the cyber attacks, yeah, we're expanding the amount of information we are going to be sharing through the internet for these companies and these jobs. So therefore, just the amount of information out there to be hacked is, you know, increasing exponentially. So the threat of that being attacked has to go up. You know, there's nefarious people out there. It's a shitty world.
Yeah, and you know, this article isn't necessarily saying that any specific company is more vulnerable than the other or whatever it happens to be, but whether you're looking across civilian companies, looking across government agencies, all of them have greatly increased their, I think the article calls it like their exposed surface area. In the end, they're used to when you're working within the confines of your building and your own infrastructure of whatever network was established there, that was one attack surface. That whole building, that whole network was one attack surface. Well, now that you have people working from home, everybody's access point is a new attack surface for a hacker. So it drastically increases the capability, the exposure towards cyber attack. And somebody is right now looking to exploit that, and it'll happen.
Well, I was always worried too about, you know, how much medical records are going to be shared now through the internet with HIPAA and things like that. All your medical information could be subject to being attacked and bought and sold. That, you know, because usually it stays in the hospital network, but now you have administrative people working from home and things like that, and there's a lot of sensitive information being shared that way. One of the story that we don't have on the outline that I did hear about this week. Did you hear that they are floating that if you test positive for COVID, they were going to release your address?
I did. It wasn't a national thing. I thought that was a state.
I don't know which state it is. I the article came up to on my timeline, so I'm assuming it might be Illinois. But either way, some state is floating the idea that if you test positive for COVID, HIPAA goes straight out the fucking window, and we're going to release your address for everyone to know.
Yeah, I don't remember what state it was. Maybe it was Illinois, but it wouldn't be surprised if it was Illinois. But I thought it passed. I thought it initially passed that they were going to release it as a contact tracing effort, so that way people know who has had it and the releasing address. Which is, yeah, I don't know how that isn't a clear violation of HIPAA to do so.
I mean, we don't release other diseases information like. This is such like fear mongering, and I don't know, man. This is so scary that they can even float this by, and a lot of people don't even know or care, or that a law like this could get through the House and potentially get enacted. That, you know, this scares the shit out of me.
It's gonna start sending like mandatory text messages like they do with Amber Alerts to everybody. Hey, Bob next door has got COVID.
They're treating COVID patients like sexual predators. You know what I mean? There's going to be, you know, next thing you know, there's going to be a website where you can check out all the dots in your neighborhood of people
releasing it, somebody's already making that website.
Yeah.
Somebody's already got that website ready for this.
Yeah. It's just waiting for the data points.
Yeah.
You know, but like, sure. That's fucked up, man. Like that, It just scares the shit out of me that we're becoming such a fearful society that we're letting the government just kind of do things like this. You know, like, I don't know, man. It's fucked up. I just think it's really fucked up.
Yeah, but all this contact tracing stuff is, it's pretty strong. I mean, we now know that Google and
just the amount of people
Apple
that are defending it by like saying, well, look at South Korea. South Korea, you know, didn't have the COVID deaths and didn't have this. Look at China. Like we're like, you hear so many people defending this thought of tracing everywhere you go. Like, I really think that we've lost sight that if you want freedom, you have to make sacrifices. I think we've gotten to this point in the country where we just think freedom comes with no cost whatsoever. And if you look at, I mean, today's Memorial Day, there's hundreds of thousands of people that paid the ultimate cost for our freedom. And I think by ignoring that fact, you know, we dishonor them. We dishonor our principles as a nation. It's a really scary thing for me.
Yeah. I don't know. This comes, you know, at the same time we've got Google and Apple working together to do their own contact tracing system, which is right now is currently like voluntary. You have to opt into it, download an app, and give permissions to share your data and receive alerts. You know, in Korea that wasn't an option. That was a required thing. Same thing in China. So right now we are not pressing it as a mandatory thing. Our cell phones and companies are not automatically doing contact tracing. So, which is the right thing.
The fact that the media and the government is selling it to us as a good thing, like that we should do, that, you know, all they have to do is keep pushing the issue and keep selling it hard. And eventually a big portion of the country is going to get duped into it.
Yeah. But if they get duped into it, that's, I guess at that point, at least you know, and you hit the, you know, will allow button on there and you gave the permissions to Google or Apple or whatever else to do the contact tracing, and knowing full well that when you hit that, that's going into Google, it's going into Apple, and it's also getting reported to the government and public health authorities on, you know, your movements, your contacts.
My fear is that it only takes a small percentage of the country to download that app and sign up for it. And if I'm standing next to somebody with that app, it's got my information and something in the terms of services, and the program allows them to now scrape my data and put me in that pool because the guy standing next to me downloaded the app and agreed to it. I mean, that's kind of what happened with the what's it face with Facebook. You know what I mean? You didn't have to take that shitty what kind of bread are you test. If your friend did, your friend gave all your information up for it. You know, so what if this is the same kind of thing where they, you know, Bob downloads the app, Bob stands next to Phil in Home Depot, and now Phil's data is scraped because Bob's an asshole.
Well, just trust in your tech companies. They don't ever fail us.
Yeah, we have plenty of reason. We have plenty of reason to do that.
Well, I think the world's still changing pretty rapidly around all of the response here to COVID. So, we'll see how it continues to shape into tech, into our tech futures going forward. But I think that's a weekend news.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. As always, you can go to thenerdcantina.com/community, join in on the convos. There's still a lot going on in that group. A lot of fun stuff. So we encourage you to come on in and be a part of that.
Absolutely. Go ahead and join. You can find us over at thenerdcantina.com/community and hit the join button and have a join in on whatever conversations we're got going on over there.
Big shout out to our friends at the Nerdy Bitches. You can check out their latest post. They have a book club that they run, and because I'm a Patreon member for the Nerdy Bitches, I got to pick their book this month. So,
oh, really?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So the entire Nerdy Bitches clan is reading Mistborn this month. So they're going to read Mistborn, and they're going to do their book club podcast on it. So if you guys want to join in, it's my favorite book. It's one of Ken's favorites. I threw $2 down, and I'm forcing their whole audience to participate in that now too. So check them out, listen to it, read Mistborn. It's a good book.
All right. Well, with all that said, Thanks for listening to episode 82, and we'll talk to you again next week, nerds.
See ya.